I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, food followers everywhere. Welcome to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, end of year special with your host, Ben Johnson, and featuring the author of Life of Action and the soon to be released Life of Action Volume 2. It's your friend and mine, Mike Fury. We very much hope you enjoy this festive roundup of all things martial arts movie related. And I just personally wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of you, the loyal Foo followers, wherever you are in the world, a huge thank you for making 2019 such an awesome year for us here on the podcast. Remember, if you are a fan of the show, and especially if you have enjoyed our output this year, then please do remember to subscribe to the show using your podcast provider. And while you're at it, why not leave us a star rating or write a little review, tell a friend, anything at all. It all helps to spread the good word of the Kung Fu Movie Guy podcast. And remember, for all the latest martial arts movie news, reviews, and podcasts, visit kungfumovieguide.com and follow us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Okay, so if everyone is now settled and feeling festive, let's get on with sending off the year in style with our end of year show. So without any further ado, let's get on with it. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Ho, 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 and a hello, and a wassail to you all. Foo followers everywhere around the world, welcome to our festive end of year show 2019. Thank you all so much for taking the time out during your holiday season to listen to this episode of the show, which promises to be, as always, a hell of a lot of fun. This is episode 49. It's the last in our current season of podcasts. In the run-up to recording this show, we have been asking all of you to share with us your favourite martial arts films of the year, and we have been inundated with comments over our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and also quite a few of you have been sending emails over to our email address, hello@kungfumovieguide.com. We have compiled all of the best ones, and we will be reading those out during the second half of this show, which is when we will also be counting down our personal top five martial arts films of the year, as well as singling out our worst martial arts film of the year. We will also be taking a look at some of the major movie news stories which broke during 2019, and also we will be looking ahead to all the great movies that are coming up in 2020. We will be reliving some of the highlights from this podcast, and of course we will be sharing our usual outtakes montage, which is always a lot of fun. And we'll also be unwrapping some Christmas presents and generally just having a nice time. So plenty of things to look forward to on this special end of year podcast. As always, I am very pleased to have a special guest sitting with me today to join in the festivities and discuss the ups and downs of the year. It is my pleasure to introduce the author, action movie expert and friend of the show, Mike Fury. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Ben. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And a very Merry Christmas
Merry
to you,
Merry Christmas
Mike.
To you as well, and Happy New Year.
Are you excited about the Christmas period and
very
the holiday
so.
Season?
Very much so. Always nice to overindulge a bit, you know, take a bit of a break after, I'm sure for everybody, what's been a hard-working year, and take some time off, enjoy some films and some downtime, and overindulge a bit.
Absolutely.
It's good.
We should say that we're recording this show very close to the Christmas break. It's the 21st of December today. And we are back in the House of Fury to record this special episode. So thank you once again for hosting the Kung Fu Movie Guide. So how has 2019 been for you, Mike?
I think it's been a big no, it's always a big question. Yeah, no, it has been good. I've been working a lot on wrapping up the second Life of Action book, which has been a big priority for me.
Out in February, people can pre-order Life of Action Volume 2 right now.
Yeah, it's available to pre-order now from my website, mikefury.net. It's also on Amazon, and it will be available on a lot of other platforms and ebook as well. There's also going to be a limited edition hardback. So that's just a nice little extra thing for people that want that.
Can you say the names that are involved in Life of Action Volume 2? Yeah, you've got Zoe Ball on the
cover. Zoe Ball's on the front cover, which is cool. There's people like Frank Grillo, Michael Jai White, Tony Jaa, Heidi Moneymaker, Kelly Hu. There's a wide range of people, and again, trying to be quite eclectic. So there's filmmakers, there's actors and actresses, there's stunt people. And also from different, sort of kind of in a sense, different eras of the industry as well, slightly more modern people who have a bit of a longer lineage, and people from all over the world, people from the East, people from the West. So hopefully it's a good kind of cross-section of people, and it's interesting to hear all their different views and experiences and take learnings from all their great work.
Absolutely. In anticipation of this show, I always put together a list of all the martial arts films that have been released during the year. As ever, there were so many on the list. How would you sum up this year in relation to martial arts movies, fight movies? Has it been a good year?
I don't know. It's a hard one. For me, not wanting to, not a risk of sounding slightly negative, I don't think it's necessarily been, from my point of view anyway, the best year for martial arts films. There have been some really good action films, also TV series, some documentaries, and a wide range of stuff, even comedies and other, maybe slightly more unusual genres, which have incorporated martial arts and action formats into that. So I think from a pure kind of kung fu martial arts point of view, probably less than we would have liked for the most part.
I found it quite hard this year to actually narrow it down into a top five.
Yeah.
I mean, did you find it quite tricky to sort of
Yeah, it was tricky. And what's especially tricky, you make this nice challenge. I should say to people, so I think I said this last time, Ben's hyper-organized. You're the most organized person I've ever done a podcast with. And I've done a few podcasts, but this is like, in terms of the notes and the prep and the research, there's a huge amount, which is great. But it does take into account, let's say, this list of films which you very kindly compose. It saves me having to do it. There's like Hollywood stuff. There's probably stuff that would qualify more as an action film, but has martial arts strongly integrated into it. So then it comes down to the definition of the best martial arts film. Are you talking about what is a martial arts film or what is an action film that has martial arts in it? And should you rate more highly the pure martial arts film that may not be quite as good cinematically as the action film that has good martial arts in it, but it's maybe a better film.
As is tradition with the annual Christmas special, I have no idea what Mike's top five is, so I'm very much looking forward to finding out what some of those titles are, if there's any crossover there. Okay, before we get into this, Mike, I think it's a good time now to exchange some Christmas presents.
Let's do it.
We try and find a martial arts movie related gift for each other, and Mike and I set ourselves a budget of £10
to spend. Can't get a lot for £10 these days. The economy is hard.
And I may have gone over it again this year. Do you want to go first, Mike?
Yours are down. Sorry, could you reach down there?
Oh, great. They're just down on the
side. You just grabbed it. Little bag. Ben's fetching his gift from under the tree.
Oh, lovely stuff. Let me get my bags over there. Let me just quickly go and get it.
Thank you very much.
So I've got a few bits and bobs.
Thank you. Wow, actually, that's heavy.
Heavy, but I've got something there for Jill as well. So just for the two of you. That's just a little stocking filler there for you, Mike.
What's this one?
This is actually a headband that is official Karate Kid merchandise.
Oh, nice.
So if you flip it over on the back, I was surprised to see this.
Yeah, let's see.
It's actually got the Karate Kid logo, the insignia.
Wow, it's cool. So you've got a nice headband.
Copyright of Columbia Pictures.
That's proper. Legit.
So that's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Nice, yeah.
There you go. So when you're doing the practicing your crane kick.
Exactly. Go on, Ben, you went overboard.
Just a few chocolates there, just sort of thrown in.
Lovely treat. Oh, this is a book. Lovely. Let's open the book. Oh, Mateus is huge.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, very interested to read this. I was going to get this, but I admit I
haven't. Do you have this book already?
I haven't, no.
Okay.
But I was very interested to read it. So, yeah, Mateus Hughes, his memoir, Shirtless in Hollywood, The Battle for Hollywood.
Obviously, Mateus has been a guest on the Kung Fu Movie Guy podcast. He was one of our early guests in the first season, I think. And he is just such a great guy. And he's got some amazing Hollywood stories as well. And that book's absolutely
I look forward to it. I'm a big fan of his work.
No Retreat, No Surrender 2, obviously. Yeah. And Dark Angel is probably
my favourite one. And many more beyond that. Just when I thought there was even more.
It's like the Mary Poppins handbag.
It's brilliant. What's this? Is that nunchuck?
So that's just for a bit of a sparring session later.
Are they they're foam covered. So
they're foam ones, absolutely.
Twat yourself.
Yeah, you don't want to be doing yourself a mischief.
Could be dual welded.
So there you go. If you want to recreate the scene from The Way of the Dragon with Bruce Lee's double nunchucks, two sets of nunchucks there.
I'll be the buffoon who knocks himself out. That's great. Thanks very much, Ben.
No worries at all, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
I'm diving in now to Mike's festive goodie bag. There's some sweeties in here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for the boxy one first, Mike. This is very kind of you. This is interesting. Okay, so we've got a cardboard box here.
It's an official Life of Action
merchandise. There you go.
That's great.
Is that available from your website?
That is available.
Yeah. What's the website address?
MikeFury.net/shop.
Fantastic. There you go.
But now that's handy for all your tea and coffee needs.
And there's two more things in here, Mike. Good grief. So this looks DVD shaped. Oh, mate.
So look,
I actually have,
the good people, this is a 4-film collection of martial arts films. So there's two Van Damme films on there. I've got alternate versions of the same set, where it's got two Van Damme films. You've got Black Eagle and
Kickboxer. Yeah, so it's on here. This is a good
I've got other random films on there, but your one contains so-called, I don't know if they are, but martial arts films with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman.
And now...
Have you seen either of these?
So Black Eagle, yes. Kickboxer, yes.
The other two, complete mysteries.
It's advertised as a martial arts film collection. We also have Fire on the Amazon starring Sandra Bullock and Nightmaster starring Nicole Kidman. I wasn't aware of those two titles. Either,
so you can watch it and let us know what you think.
Thank you, Mike. That's very good. Okay. I've got one more gift in here. Yeah. Here we go. Okay, this looks book shaped.
Yes, good reading material.
Okay, wow, this looks interesting. It's a Rush Hour. It's a book about Rush Hour?
Yeah.
This is the only book on the celebrated Rush Hour movie starring Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan, directed by Brett Ratner. Fantastic.
I'm sure as a Rush Hour fan, you could read up on all the anecdotes behind the scenes.
It's an extraordinary full-colour visual companion covering all three Rush Hour films. That is fantastic. There's over 370 photos in here, Mike.
All you need.
That's great. Thank you so much, Mike. I think we should probably raise a toast at this point to our listeners.
Yeah.
It's the Christmas special. Let's have a wee drink.
Beverage.
Shall we do that?
Have a beverage, yeah.
I've bought Mike a bottle here of Advocar. Mike, have you had this drink before?
I've had it, yeah. I think I had it as a kid, which probably isn't the best thing. But, it's sort of like Christmas family, someone lets you try something.
Absolutely.
That's about it. I haven't had it since. So.
Most people would have Advocar with lemonade.
I've got lemonade. Do you want it?
Do you have lemonade? Yeah. If you're a vegan, this is not good for vegans. It's essentially a boozy custard. It's yellow in colour. It's quite a thick consistency, and it's traditionally had it at Christmas time. But I would say, Mike, this is very much an acquired taste.
Okay.
I mean, it looks slightly revolting. I'm going to be honest with you.
Do you want to pour? Go on, you do the honors.
Now I'm just going to pour this directly into the glass. We've just made some. I believe these are called snowballs. There you go. Quite a gloopy. Consistency. Okay. Is that about enough, do you think?
I think so, yeah. We'll
do you want a little bit more?
See.
And we should just say cheers to all
cheers.
The listeners.
Thank you, listeners. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you,
Merry
Mike.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That's not too bad.
And actually, it's not It doesn't taste how it looked before.
No, because it doesn't look great, does it? Cheers, everyone. Thank you very much. We'll be sipping on our Advocar, our snowballs, as the podcast progresses. Yeah. We'll crack on now with some of the highlights of 2019. I've got a little clip of my voice here saying highlights of 2019. Do you want to hear that? Highlights of 2019. Okay, so I think we should probably start off by talking about the Kung Fu movie event of the year, Ip Man 4.
Yeah.
So Ip Man 4 was released yesterday in China, the 20th of December, and it will be released in selected cinemas across the UK and the USA from the 25th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And the film itself is the final part of the Ip Man saga, which started way back in 2008, believe it or not. All four of the films have been directed by Wilson Yip and star Donnie Yen. At a press conference in Beijing in November, Donnie said that Ip Man 4 would be his final Kung Fu movie. Here's a direct quote from that press conference. Mike, he said, "As an actor, you must keep going forward. I'm very grateful. Ip Man 4, the finale, is my final Kung Fu movie. I hope it can be written on a valuable page in Chinese film history, and I will continue my journey as an actor." So, Mike, we have heard this before.
Yeah.
I believe after Ip Man 3 came out, Donnie Yen said words of a similar vein. What do you think about this? Do you think he actually means it this time? It sounds like he does mean it.
Yeah, I think it sounds a bit more official. Bearing in mind, there's a lot that kind of reading between the lines there. I'm guessing he means as an actor. Obviously, it's not to say he wouldn't do any more martial arts related films as a fight coordinator or as a director and so on. The other thing is that he still does very action centric or fight centric dramas or thrillers or things like that in the past. So maybe, you know, he's talking about Kung Fu films in a traditional sense.
Do you think that the world is sort of done now with these old fashioned traditional Kung Fu movies? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think the world is done with it. I mean, obviously these things do evolve and change, but I think Donnie strikes me as somebody who's also probably quite open to, he's kind of done his thing, he's taken it as far as he wants to in his own niche of Kung Fu genre acting. But, you know, not forgetting he's a filmmaker as well, and he's a choreographer, and he's also shown he's got real acting chops. He can do a lot of other stuff, so I think he's not limiting himself to just one thing and maybe wants to focus elsewhere.
We should say we've still got Mulan, Enter the Fat Dragon, Raging Fire, and this potential Sleeping Dogs movie as well, which Donnie's involved in. So plenty more Donnie Yen action on the way. He's still not turning his back on
to be honest, for me personally, as much as I do love Ip Man, those films, I actually prefer the more kind of dramatic and character-driven stuff, like, you know, I think the Sleeping Dogs movie is a really exciting prospect, because I'm a big fan of the video game as well. That's great. That universe, that world, very much makes me think of like SPL and that franchise. You know, that kind of thing is very exciting to me. So I would look forward to seeing what he does next in that area.
In martial arts tournaments, it's very frustrating. You stand in front of a guy, you just want to let him have it, but you can't. So you got to do this play-acting patty cake version. Cassius Clay, Sonny Liston, Joe Louis, the colored boxer, not that white kickboxing asshole. They do what they need to do to win. They unleash as much punishment as they have to defeat the other guy. But in martial arts tournaments, I do to win what they do to win. I unleash all my power. I kill people.
Well, if you fought Cassius Clay, who would win?
Well, that would never happen.
But if you did, what do you think would happen?
I'd make him a cripple.
Mike Mo there, playing Bruce Lee in the film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Quentin Tarantino released his 9th film as a director, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, on the 26th of July 2019. It was released to great critical and public acclaim. The film tells the story of a faded TV actor and his stunt double as they strive for fame and success at the tail end of Hollywood's so-called Golden Age. It's set in 1969 in Los Angeles. Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt star in the film alongside a great cast, many of whom are playing real people from the time period. period. The scene involving Bruce Lee did spark controversy when Shannon Lee, Bruce Lee's daughter, went on record to criticize the depiction of her father in the film. In describing the scene, Shannon said it was disheartening to see Quentin Tarantino depict her father as, and this is her quote, an arrogant a-hole who was full of hot air. She added, I understand they want to make the Brad Pitt character this super badass who could beat up Bruce Lee, but they didn't need to treat him the way that white Hollywood did when he was alive. Quentin Tarantino did have the opportunity to reply to the criticisms that were labelled at his film, and he said this at a press conference in Moscow on the 7th of August.
Bruce Lee was kind of an arrogant guy. I didn't just make a lot of that up. I heard him say things like that to that effect. And even the thing, you know, people are like, well, he never said he could beat up Muhammad Ali. Yeah, he did, all right? Not only did he say that, his wife, Linda Lee, said that. And the first biography I ever read was Linda Lee's Bruce Lee, the Man Only I Knew. And she absolutely said it. Could Cliff beat up Bruce Lee? Brad would not be able to beat up Bruce Lee. But Cliff maybe could, all right? And then if you ask me the question, I'm like, okay, well, who would win in a fight, Bruce Lee or Dracula? It's the same question. It's a fictional character. If I say Cliff could beat Bruce Lee up, he's a fictional character, then he could beat Bruce Lee up.
An audio clip there from a video which was uploaded to YouTube by Radar Magazine. Just to counter all of this, the Bruce Lee biographer Matthew Polly took to Twitter after seeing that Quentin Tarantino clip and wrote a whole thread fact-checking a lot of the statements that Quentin Tarantino makes in that clip, in reference to Lee saying he would cripple Muhammad Ali. Polly wrote that in Linda's book, she was in fact quoting a TV critic. The quote in the book reads, "Even the most scathing critics admitted that Bruce's kung fu was sensational. One critic wrote, those who watched him would bet on Lee to render Cassius Clay senseless if they were put in a room and told that anything goes." Matthew Polly also added, Bruce was obsessed with Ali, studying all of Ali's fights in detail. He frequently imagined fighting Ali. When asked directly by John Saxon if he could beat Ali, Bruce replied, "Look at my hand. That's a little Chinese hand. He'd kill me." That is a quote from the Robert Klaus book, Bruce Lee, the biography. Mike, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, and I get elements of both sides, to be honest. Like, I'm a huge Tarantino fan, and I love the film, actually. I'm a big fan of all Tarantino's films. I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, great film, for many, many reasons. Obviously, it's funny how this has become such a talking point, and it's just a very small part of the film. I did take the perspective that this was not a spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it's kind of a fantasy sequence of the character of Cliff, played by Brad Pitt, because it kind of, he's repairing an aerial, isn't he, on a roof, and then it cuts to him imagining.
Correct.
On set.
It's a flashback to, yeah, supposedly a time when he, yeah, I guess, is a stunt double on the Green Hornet. Mm-hmm. But it's not entirely clear whether it is a fantasy or not. So there's a bit of a blurring of the lines there.
And kind of throwing his weight around a bit. And it's like the American stuntman, you know, hears somebody mouthing off and then wants to teach him a lesson. It's kind of got that element. And I actually read online some other people had that view as well. So I don't know if it was intended to be taken completely as fact within the story, although it's obviously not fact. It's still a creative narrative. I understand a certain amount of offense taken from Bruce Lee's family, because I suppose it's when you're dealing with somebody's legacy, and especially somebody who's not here probably to, you know, to defend themselves, you know, to hear though that response from Shannon, like, I get it. But then also I think there's a part of it that is just a creative choice of the filmmakers and telling a story, and it's a narrative device, maybe not to be taken so literally. One aspect which I will say is unfortunate is because, as you alluded to, they do feature performances or dramatizations of some various different characters from Hollywood's past.
Yes.
And, you know, just brief moments of Steve McQueen, and there's different people in there. And obviously the scene with Bruce is the one that's probably he kind of comes off less well than other people. But then I wonder if that's also falling victim to the purposes of the scene with Brad Pitt's character throwing his weight around yeah. and proving that he's the tough guy, and it just yeah. happened to be Bruce in that example.
Yeah. I know a lot of people on the internet went bananas because Brad Pitt's character is seen to win in the fight against Bruce Lee. That didn't bother me at all. A lot of the posturing and the general attitude and some of the words that Quentin Tarantino has written for this Bruce Lee character, I thought just rang really off. That was my personal view. Yeah,
and I mean, which is a bit weird as well, because we know Quentin Tarantino is a big fan of Bruce Lee.
He's a huge Bruce Lee fan. Yeah.
But maybe it was, you know, I mean, unless we have him here on the podcast, exactly. he can explain himself. But, you know, it's a plot device within the film as well. But
if it is a plot device, like, why make it Bruce Lee? You know, why?
It could be anybody. It
could be anybody.
Well, yeah. I guess Bruce Lee would be seen as one of the toughest
yeah.
guys
yeah.
that you could make that point with.
Yeah.
But also, the thing is, I think it is playing on, whether you take it completely as a factual depiction of him or not, it's playing on certain tropes that we know Bruce did have this air of confidence, this kind of philosophical way of speaking,
yeah.
talking about Cassius Clay and other people. So it kind of played on some of those tropes, but obviously to quite a heightened extent.
Yeah.
And I should say, as well, you know, I think Mike Moe did a really good job with this character.
Absolutely. And Mike Moe, his, as you heard in that clip, he's got the intonation, the tone, the way yeah. he holds himself. I thought he was wonderful, actually.
He did a really good job, and he played it very well. Okay. You know, some people will like it or find it entertaining. Some people won't like it so much, and it kind of strikes a nerve, which I get it. I do get it. Because the thing is, when you're portrayed in a Quentin Tarantino film, it's a big deal.
It's a big spotlight, isn't it?
And
I can understand the sensitivities there around portraying Bruce Lee's image in that yeah. light.
And know? I suppose to be fair, I would say that we're discussing this, and I'm sure many of the people who've weighed in online and elsewhere, you know, we're discussing this as people that kind of get the full story.
Yeah.
So we can weigh up, oh, it's, you know, we know he wasn't quite like this, or he was yeah. a bit like that, or whatever. But there are people out there that probably don't know anything about Bruce Lee, and this is going to be their little flavour of, oh, so that's what Bruce Lee was like. It's like, well, not really. That's maybe one of the issues.
Yeah. But, you know. Yeah. As if that wasn't enough, in other Bruce Lee related news, his former home at 41 Cumberland Road, Kowloon Tong in Hong Kong, was demolished this year to make way for a Chinese studies centre. Bruce Lee bought the home in 1971, and despite best efforts from fans to save the mansion and potentially turn it into a museum, it was eventually demolished in October of this year. Mike, I found this story quite sad, but then I guess you can't get in the way of progress, can you?
Yeah, I wish there was a museum as well. I don't know why somebody didn't think to invest in that, because I think that would be quite a good tourist hub as well. And absolutely. Unfortunately, a lot of these things come down to money,
yeah.
as we know. At least, you know, to be a kind of a tourist draw would be good. It sounds kind of like a missed opportunity with the museum. You're going to have to fill up again. Come on, Ben, I've nearly finished and you've still
I'm doing too much talking.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. It's quite claggy, though. It kind of lingers in the mouth for quite a while. Bruce Lee's legacy maybe was better served on the small screen in 2019, thanks to the HBO TV series Warrior, based on an original concept written by Bruce Lee. The show premiered on the 5th of April 2019 on the Cinemax channel in the USA. Mike, did you get to watch any of this show?
Yeah, I loved it. Absolutely loved the show. Definitely one of my favourite series this year. It's got the martial arts element, but I love the historical aspect, the 1870s San Francisco. You've got the gangsters, the Tongs, the various factions. You've got the local Irish community absolutely. Of workers. You've got the Americans, the kind of the political side. You've got the police. And it's kind of this melting pot for a great kind of gangster-themed kind of, criminal show with martial arts and with these elements. I was glad that it's been renewed for second season,
potentially a third season as well in the cards, so that's really fantastic. Warrior was named as one of the best new TV shows of 2019 by Rolling Stone. And of the shows which were also released this year, which had a martial arts element to them, the fantasy series Wu Assassins came out this year. That landed on Netflix in August. We also have the second season of Cobra Kai released exclusively to YouTube Premium. We had The Mandalorian this year as well, that started in November on Disney's new streaming platform, Disney Plus. This series features the former MMA fighter and martial arts action star Gina Carano, and on the 6th of May this year, we said goodbye to the martial arts series Into the Badlands, which starred Daniel Wu, Emily Beecham and Nick Frost. After three seasons of the show, it was cancelled by the network AMC, despite a very strong following. Mike, we do say this every year, but it just seems that there's so much great content out there now for the martial arts action fan. It seems like we're spoiled for choice these days.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good problem to have, as I always say.
Absolutely.
It's a good, the thing that's annoying for, I'm sure, everybody is all the different streaming platforms you have to subscribe to watch everything. It's kind of hard to keep up and it can be a bit expensive. But I guess if you want to see, you know, if you want to see what you want to see, it's just something that needs to be done. But it would be good if they could somehow integrate a bit.
I know Kung Fu.
A special shout out to the one and only Keanu Reeves, who had a wonderful year this year, 2019. It felt like this was the year that everyone remembered just how awesome and nice Keanu Reeves is. He seemed especially humbled by the huge success of John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. More on that film later, I would imagine, Mike.
Yep. I'm just topping up your advertising.
Thank you very much. He also lent his voice to Toy Story 4 as the daredevil toy Duke Kaboom. Did you enjoy that, Mike?
I loved it. That was great. It's a great character as well.
He pretty much stole the film, in my opinion. And he also announced this year that, yes, the rumours were true. There will be another Matrix film on its way. So the Matrix 4 won't be out till the 21st of May 2021, which coincidentally is the same date as John Wick 4. What would you like to see from the Matrix 4?
Well, from a purely selfish point of view, I'd love to see... So Keanu's obviously devotes himself, you know, enormously to the action in all fronts, whether it was The Matrix back then and the kung fu training, to the John Wick, the MMA, the gun training. You think, what could he do next? Maybe some really brutal MMA, because I think, you know, that's still very much in the kind of the taste palette of the modern audience.
Absolutely.
I think, with the kind of, not just John Wick on its own, but that style of the very dynamic, close quarters, gritty, brutal fighting, something a bit more along those lines. I don't know that they could replicate the exact same earlier first Matrix kung fu thing today. I don't know if that would work as well in its own right. They'll have to infuse it with something else, I think.
Yes, yeah. It was very much in the sort of cultural zeitgeist of the time, wasn't it? And that wire fu as well was very big around that time, and Crouching Tiger as well.
Which is great and would still look good, but I can see them not repeating, and I don't think Keanu would do the same thing again.
No, I agree. Quick word on Keanu Reeves. I mean, he turned 55 this year. What a great year he's had.
Yeah, he eats his vegetables.
Yes.
No, but I mean, yeah, absolutely amazing. He doesn't age and he's clearly super committed to his action.
Yeah.
So I think that bodes very well for pretty much everything he's got coming next.
2019 also saw the passing of a few familiar faces from the world of martial arts and action cinema. On the 9th of January 2019, we lost the Greek martial artist and action star Stefanos Miltsakakis. He died at the age of 59. Stefanos was perhaps most famous for being the powerful muscle man who squared off against Jean-Claude Van Damme in a number of films, including Cyborg, The Quest, Maximum Risk, Lionheart and Derailed. And on the 19th of July 2019, the great Dutch actor Rutger Hauer died at the age of 75, most famous probably for his role as the murderous replicant Roy Batty in Blade Runner. But martial arts movie fans, of course, will remember him fondly for his role as Nick Parker, the blind Vietnam War vet and sword fighting expert from the 1989 film Blind Fury. And on the 4th of September, we lost Chan Sing, also referred to as Chen Sing, the star of countless classic kung fu movies from Hong Kong, including the 1972 film Tough Guy, which is also known as Kung Fu the Head Crusher, which is a great title. He's also in Sammo Hung's directorial debut, The Iron-Fisted Monk. Chan Sing was most famous for playing villains. He started his career at the Shaw Brothers in the late 1960s and continued to act in Hong Kong films until his retirement in the 1990s. Chan Sing died in Jakarta, Indonesia at the age of 82. Okay, we are almost at that time in the show when we will be counting down our top five martial arts movies of 2019. Yay! But before we do that, let's take a moment to look back over some of the awesome guests that we have had on the show this year. Season 4 has been a real treat to compile and put together, and I've been very fortunate to chat to a really diverse range of people from around the world. So in this short clip, you will hear from, and in this order, the martial arts star and Ip Man 4 baddie Scott Adkins, Scarlett Johansson's stunt double and also Halle Berry's fight trainer for John Wick 3, Heidi Moneymaker. You will hear from the B-movie action star, Don the Dragon Wilson, the stunt performer who almost died when a stunt went horribly wrong while doubling for Mila Jovovich, that's Olivia Jackson, UK stunt coordinator Jude Poyer, and the final voice you'll hear will be Bruce Lee's daughter, Shannon Lee. So, here we go, here's our rundown of some of the voices from the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast in 2019.
Hi, this is Scott Adkins and you're listening to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast.
You've pretty much worked with everyone now, I'd imagine. There can't be many people left. Donnie rates quite highly up there.
Of course, what am I going to say? Yeah. No, he's amazing. And he taught me a lot. And I said to him, listen, I'm here to learn as well as to, you know, do a job for you. I want to learn as much as I can. And it's fantastic, again, to be, you know, from one of your peers, to be given the respect and for him to want me to play that part. An important, very important part in, you know, his most famous franchise.
Scarlett's amazing. Scarlett Johansson, I usually double her. She's wonderful. She's done some awesome shit. Really has. But with Halle, it was like a 6 month long grind, and there were ups and downs and things that happened and things that we had to get through, and there was points where she just was worried that she wasn't going to be able to do it all, you know, that kind of thing. And the last scene, when she finished filming her last action scene in Morocco, she sat down and looked at me and got tears in her eyes, and she said, I did it.
I am a much better actor today after 30 years of acting in front of cameras and starring in 30 films than I was in 1988 doing Blood Fist. I've come a long way. So now, when I get my chance at a big budget, a good director, a good script, great cast, I'll be able to make that transition, I believe.
The really hardest part for me was the change of lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, how much I love my martial arts and how crazy I was about motocross. Like, that was my life, motocross, and you know, I loved stunts and my work and everything, and all of that was taken away. The good thing is that it's given me a lot of time to practice my Dharma, my Buddhist practices.
The action that I want to create is not about being realistic, but it's about being believable within the world of the story and the world that you create with the film or the show. So as long as it's believable, that's okay.
Yeah.
And I like fight scenes to feel like a fight.
Mm.
And I think that's something that's lacking in a lot of projects now, as you see people doing techniques, but there doesn't seem to be any intention behind it or any consequence.
I remember what he felt like. I remember his energy. I remember the feeling of him. And the feeling of him was so powerful and so impactful to me as a toddler that I had that. And and so there's a part of me that's like, oh, I know this guy. And I thought for many years, I thought I was crazy because I was like, why do I feel like I know this person so well? Like when you ask me the question, like, you know, you have to make decisions, and is that hard? And certainly it's hard for a number of reasons, but I've always had this sense of, like, I know him, and I kind of know what he would want.
Some voices there from Season 4 of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Remember, you can listen back to all of the previous episodes of the show via all the usual podcast places. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Acast, many, many more, I'm sure. You can also access the podcast via our website. The address is kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, Mike, I think now is the time to run down our best and highlight maybe some of the not so good films from the year. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do this. I think it makes sense to highlight our worst martial arts films from the year, first of all. So, without any further ado, here we go. The worst martial arts film of 2019.
I actually think, not wanting to sound too diplomatic, but I think there's some redeemable value in most things.
I'd agree.
That very rarely do you get something that's absolutely god-awful.
Yeah.
It's quite rare, if you're honest. But I understand that you had a...
Yeah, well, I would say, and I think probably because I went into this, because so many people said that this film was bad, that it's wrong, isn't it, to go into a film expecting it to be bad.
Yeah.
But a film like Escape Plan 3, mm-hmm. say, okay, this stars Sylvester Stallone, Dave Bautista, and Matt Chang.
Yeah.
And so many people slated it, and I thought it had some redeeming qualities to it. I absolutely love seeing Matt Chang in action.
Yeah.
It was great to see him. Obviously, he had worked with Dave Bautista before in Master Z, Ip Man Legacy. And the two worked very well together in that. Matt Chang's fight scenes in this movie I thought were pretty decent.
And Daniel Bernhardt's in that.
Daniel Bernhardt's in it. And you get to see a fight scene between Matt Chang and Daniel Bernhardt. So, I mean, you know, what more can you want?
Yeah, I should say Clayton Barber as well, who's a very talented martial artist in his own right. And he also fight coordinated Creed and Black Panther and others. He looks after the fights.
Was it a particularly memorable film? Probably not. But, you know, it wasn't the worst film I've seen in the world.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's a movie that's released on Amazon Prime. It's out there at the moment. This film is called A Karate Christmas Miracle. Have you seen the poster for this?
I've seen the poster. I haven't actually watched the film, but I look forward to hearing your...
Super low budget directorial debut from Julie Kimmel, who also writes the film. Yeah, okay, it's a bit overacted in bits. It's super low budget, so it hasn't got the best sets. I would say the direction isn't particularly too creative, but to its credit, it's a film with quite an earnest, wholesome message, and it's quite hard to get too annoyed about a film its heart's in the right place.
Can you describe the plot?
I certainly can, Mike. So it's about a kid called Jesse who is struggling to cope after the disappearance of his father. His dad has been involved in a mysterious shooting at a cinema.
Doesn't sound very kid-friendly.
So, well, it's not really, because the poor kid's having an awful time. He keeps having nightmares, and within his nightmares he's having these premonitions, and he's convinced that if he achieves a black belt by Christmas Day, his dad will come back.
Sounds pretty heavy going.
Yeah, it is. It
and how
is
long
quite
he got?
Heavy. Well, this is the thing that I would say is slightly dubious about the film. So at the start of the film they say it's 6 days until
he's
Christmas
got 6 days.
He's got
is
6 days.
Is he a white belt?
He's got a blue belt by that stage.
So he's not
but still, you know, he's
you
still
can't earn a black belt in six
in
days.
6 days.
If you train 24 hours a day with no sleep,
exactly.
You can, how do you do it? Did
he
do
keeps
it?
Cutting away to him just training in the front room, and he's punching the sofa and all
to,
this
mate.
Sort of stuff.
Kid, you've got to do it.
Absolutely.
No so school for you.
The story is more about his mother, Abby. She hasn't taken a lot of time to properly grieve, I would say. And she's probably neglected her son's needs somewhat. And as this story develops, the two grow further apart. She seeks solace from a good-hearted lawyer who is also a psychic, conveniently, for the plot, and she ends up helping the investigation into the dad's disappearance. So essentially, she needs to remember that it's important to take time away from your busy hectic lifestyle and spend a bit more time with the family. Yeah,
otherwise your kid practices karate all day and all night in the living room.
Exactly. Look, it's a good, kind-hearted message, particularly around this time of year. Also, this film has Martin Cove, famous from the Karate Kid films, of course, and Cobra Kai, and Eric Roberts. These are great actors with great pedigree, particularly in martial arts films as well. And I would say probably for both of them, it took them probably about 20 minutes to just record.
Who do they each play?
So it's very unclear.
Go on.
It's quite unclear as to who they are. It's not fully explained.
But is it not significant characters? Is it like a random guy?
They appear within the nightmares that the child is having. So
the kid's having nightmares about Martin Cove and Eric Roberts.
That's correct. It's very puzzling, those parts of the film. And I would say that I'm not fully sure that either Eric Roberts or Martin Cove are fully aware of the overall story of the film.
They just did their scenes.
Took the chair.
Well, it does sound intriguing, I have to admit.
And also, on the plus side, it's an hour and 20 minutes, so it's not very long.
Tight runtime, yeah.
Yes, although I would say in certain parts, it feels longer.
Okay.
There we go. That's called A Karate Christmas Miracle, one for the festive season. Yes, fun for all the family.
Yeah, I have to earn my black belt by Christmas, and I have to teach myself.
Jesse, a black belt by Christmas?
I just saw that. I'm telling you, he's alive. I need to get that black belt.
Focus. Streamline.
We will haunt these victims.
Getting a black belt is not going to bring back Daddy. These are just dreams you're having.
This is the moment you've all been waiting for. This is our rundown of the best martial arts films of 2019. The best martial arts films of 2019. We have whittled these down from a particularly long list of films. We should also mention a slight disclaimer in that it can take a little bit longer for these films, particularly Asian films, to get over to the UK via official distributors. So one or two of the films on the list, you might look up on IMDb and they do have 2018 attached to them, but they were only released here either on streaming services or on Blu-ray and DVD at some point in 2019. And it was tricky to compile this top five. There was a few films that I was really wrestling with, and then I put this together last night and I was like, oh, well, I'll sleep on that. Should I change it? But no, I'm gonna stick with the top five that I've got here. Did you find it quite challenging?
Yeah, it's difficult to whittle down, and you have to remember this is just someone's opinion. This is just my opinion. This is your opinion. I'm sure people listening at home or on your travels on the train or driving will hopefully send Ben lots of abuse when you disagree with his awful
Bring
choice.
It on.
But
we've got the nunchucks, exactly. Somewhere.
But, it is difficult, and it's all subjective, and people respond to different stuff, and different things resonate with different people. So, yeah, it's difficult, but it does come down to a subjective choice. But that's all anything ever is. A review is, or anything is just a choice, isn't it?
Exactly. We're going to obviously read out a lot of your comments that you have submitted in advance of this show being recorded. So we'll be reading those out shortly as well. Mike, I think we're ready for the top five.
Yeah.
Should we do this?
Let's do it.
This is number five. Number five.
My number five is going to be Triple Threat.
Nice
And, Triple Threat was touted to be like the martial arts extravaganza event of the year. And I don't think you can really argue with that claim. No. Obviously, the casting was amazing. I'm sure everybody that's listening will have seen it. But that combination of star talent. And importantly, I think it's not just, it's not an Expendables, not that anything bad against Expendables, but it's not an Expendables thing of getting the old guys back together. Mm-hmm. These are all people in their prime, performing in their prime, whether it's Iko Uwais, Tony Jaa, Tiger Chen, Scott Adkins, Michael Jai White, Michael Bisping, Gigi Yenin, great, amazing cast under the direction of Jesse V. Johnson. And, I think you absolutely got your money's worth. And I was amazed at how much action they managed to cram in. Tim Mann, who did the fight choreography, who's obviously, you've had him on the podcast before, and he's in Life of Action too. He did tell me about how stressful that experience was, but he came out of it feeling like, once I've done this, I can do anything.
Yeah.
Putting together that sheer volume of fights, and again, not making it flat, not making it repetitious. Each fight has its own style, its own tone, and works in favor of certain actors, and it's molded to their style and their disciplines.
You didn't feel shortchanged. No. If you're a Tony Jaa fan, you got enough.
Yeah.
Tony Jaa, Michael Jai White was well used. I think all of them.
I think everyone had a moment. A lot of people talked about Gigi Yanin, but we happen to know, and we've heard Jesse's, you know, very open about this. He's talked about how I don't think she had a very well developed character in the script in the first place. So actually, what we got from her was pretty much engineered for the film for her. So she got, come on, spoilers, but guys, I'm sure you've all seen it. A very cool death scene as well.
Unbelievably cool. Yeah.
So, you know, but that's the thing. Everyone gets their little moments and their little spotlight. So, you know, it was good to see that, and you know, everybody got a good moment to shine.
Triple Threat, of course, was a huge hit with our listeners. Harona Cisse on Twitter said, "I like Triple Threat. It had a great storyline along with great action." Hanajan on Twitter said, "It features some of the best fight performers doing some great work in a B-movie that feels like something from the past in a good way. While it's cool to see Iko Uwais with greats such as Scott Adkins and Michael Jai White, Tony Jaa is a personal standout, fun whenever on screen." And Christopher Evans, also on Twitter, said that Triple Threat by far delivered the most action this year. So a big hit with a lot of our listeners.
I think that's the key thing. You think about, what do you want from this? And this one absolutely delivers on its promise. You know, you're not going to come out of this being disappointed.
So I wrestled with this one, Mike. It was going to be Triple Threat. Yeah. Okay. Was potentially going to be in at number five for me as well. So there you go, wise minds.
Yes.
But I have gone for a film called The Art of Self-Defense. That is my number five. I did want to shout about The Art of Self-Defense because I think it got quite a minuscule release. There wasn't too much of a buzz around it. It certainly didn't get a cinematic release here in the UK. It is available on Blu-ray. So I would urge people to go and watch this film if they haven't seen The Art of Self-Defense. It's a little offbeat indie comedy written and directed by Riley Stearns. It stars Jesse Eisenberg, Imogen Poots and Alessandra Nivola. It's not really an action film, although there are fight scenes in it. We should say choreographed and designed by Mindy Kelly, who was a guest on the podcast this year. The story concerns Jesse Eisenberg, who plays a nerdy accountant who is mugged and then takes up karate as a way to better protect himself. Nivola plays the sensei, and he's a bit of a sort of Rex Kwando character from Napoleon Dynamite. And initially he is very funny and dry, but as the film continues, it takes on his role, and his character particularly does take on a much more sinister and darker twist. And the film becomes really super tense. It's essentially a study on toxic masculinity and abuse of power, but it's also very funny in bits as well. So I do wholeheartedly recommend going out and finding this one if you didn't get to catch it. That's my number five, The Art of Self-Defense.
Yeah, no, I really liked that one as well. That was a hard one. I was quite keen to include that as well. I'm big into comedy, and particularly I really like the dark and like blackly black comedy. And obviously the film's pretty violent in places.
Absolutely.
And,
shocking.
Kind of set, would you say, it's a bit of an alternate reality. It's kind of slightly heightened, weird. It's a very strange film.
Yes.
But I really liked it. And again, I would say actually it's an interesting one to include, because although the martial arts element is not, I mean, it's not a martial arts genre film, it's actually very central to the plot.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the film is set in a dojo. It's very original as well. I can't think of the last film I saw that was quite like that.
Totally agree. Yeah absolutely. That's The Art of Self-Defense. Yeah. That is my number five.
Yeah.
Should we crack on to our number four? Here we go.
Number four.
What was your number four favorite martial arts film?
My number four is Fury.
Whoa.
Do I sense a snap there?
So my number four is Fury as well. Okay. Interesting. Well,
let's discuss.
Can we just say, we have not discussed this.
No, we haven't discussed
this. Not even off mic.
Any similarities will be purely coincidental.
Yeah.
But it's funny that we've aligned a bit on this. So, you know, look, and we've had this conversation before. I don't think martial arts films need to reinvent the wheel all the time. If they do, that's great, and I enjoy seeing that. But something simple done well is really the touchstone for me. And I can think of a lot of examples of films I like, especially martial arts films, where they can, you know, they can borrow from traditions things from the genre that we all know and love, but kind of make it their own or localize it a bit. And examples I could think of are things like Ong Bak, the Thai culture, where they've taken that kind of story but made it, I think, you know, really injected the Buddhism aspect and the Thai culture into it. Or even something like Merentau from Gareth Evans for Indonesia, or obviously The Raid as well, where they're taking, you know, kind of quite simple genre-based stories but making it local and really kind of giving you an immersion into the local culture and bringing local qualities to it. So yeah, I think Fury does that very well as a Vietnamese film. So it takes, it's kind of a simple kidnapping story from this badass woman who's you know, got a bit of a mysterious past, and we learn the hard background that she comes from as she goes rogue to rescue her daughter. But again, just, you know, immersing you into a kind of the underbelly, the criminal underbelly of Vietnam. Great fight sequences, but also very good acting and very well written, good performances.
Absolutely. I think we should definitely call out the skills of Veronica Ngor, who is the star of Fury and is very much the star. I think she's in pretty much every scene. And what an array of emotions that she shows, as well as doing what looks like the main bulk of all the action as well. Definitely. A fantastic performance from her in this film. It really drives the film.
That's the thing that people, I think it's often overlooked, you know, obviously the action's great and we all love the, you know, great fight scenes, but you really need the drama and the storytelling to drive that and to make you invested and care.
Totally agree with you, Mike. And she has been in Hollywood films the last few years. She was in Bright with Will Smith. She was in The Last Jedi as well. And this feels like a real star-making performance from her. I really enjoyed Fury. It kind of took me by surprise. This film had a great response from a lot of the listeners as well. Tai Seng over email, your friend of mine. Veronica Ngor is going to be a great star in the future, says Tai. Dow on Twitter said Fury was their favourite film of the year. The story was so great and showed social issues, very refreshing.
Talking about the kidnapping, I guess, because that's sadly and tragically a big thing in that part of the world, particularly.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Could Be Dan on Instagram has written, easily Fury, a unique movie setting for an unfortunately common problem in the modern world. Solid action and clever chase scenes. It was a real surprise packet. Totally agree with that. 327 on Instagram also said, Fury because of Veronica Ngor's fiery performance. And Wagner Maxen on Instagram said, Fury, without a doubt, intense action from beginning to end. Great acting skills by Veronica Ngor, not to mention showing a country we don't get to see very often in movies, which is, you know, very true, isn't it? And shot so well as well. Okay, there you go. We agreed on number four.
Great.
Let's see if we agree on number three. Here we go.
Number three.
Okay, so, Mike, do you want to reveal your number three?
My number three is Ip Man 4, the finale. Are you laughing, Ben, because you have a...
My number three is Ip Man 4, the finale.
Too predictable. We did not, we have not checked our list.
Honestly, we have not. So that's very interesting.
But let's see how our views may vary on this. Okay, so...
Well, this is quite fresh in my mind. I only saw this week. Okay. So, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah. Look, and I'm sure you're the same. I'm a huge fan of the Ip Man franchise. From the first film, you know, I love all the films, but I think the first one obviously holds up to be the best. You don't see that many proper bona fide kung fu films these days, I don't think. And I think Ip Man franchise, but also obviously the fourth film, continues that tradition. You know, it's just such a great character. And I found it to be, I guess, as a fan, I'm sure many people feel this way. You know, I take the emotional content of films very seriously. And I found it to be a very moving and emotional finale. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, aside from the action, all the great stuff that happens, you know, the end, it had me a bit
weak. Did you shed a tear?
I shed a few tears.
Oh, Mike.
But, you know, it's I think it was done very well, very effectively. Yeah. Not to mention the action, all the great stuff we could talk about, but, you know, just the story's great. And as a conclusion to the story arc of Ip Man and then Bruce Lee involved in this kind of stuff, it was very affecting. And what did you think, Ben?
My take home from this film was it's a great showcase for Yen Wu Ping. Obviously, you know, we don't need to talk about what an absolute genius Yen Wu Ping is as a fight choreographer, but I think Ip Man 4 really showcases his mm-hmm. talents in a really good light. He's always been an absolute master at this, but the way that there was Wing Chun being pitted against Tai Chi, really enjoyed the Wing Chun against the karate, obviously mm-hmm. embodied by Scott Adkins, who plays mm-hmm. the villain of the film.
I love Yuan Wu-ping, but he exercised a bit more restraint than usual on the wires as well.
Yeah, I wondered whether just working with Wilson Yip, maybe he was reining him in, quite literally reining him in.
It feels appropriate because Wing Chun as a style, but also I think the Ip Man format is a bit more grounded.
And also you had the whole Bruce Lee element in it as well. Danny Chan plays Bruce Lee in this film.
He's done this so many times, hasn't he, in the TV series and other films. I thought it was well done. I mean, it was a fairly small role if you think about it compared to, you know, what it could have been. But no, I thought it was done well. I enjoyed his fight with our friend Mark Strange.
Mark Strange.
Had a great fight scene there, very memorable. And I think, again, Danny Chan captured, he really captured the character and the essence of Bruce Lee with the sounds and the fighting style, the nunchucks and so on. So that was really good to see. And again, had a nice dramatic arc to Ip Man's story.
Absolutely.
Which worked really well. And yeah, Scott Adkins, great as well.
Yeah.
Made a great villain. I mean, look, these films are not, and I think Hong Kong film generally, but these films in particular are not known for their subtlety. It's pretty on the nose in terms of the racist villains.
Agreed.
And the Chinese standing up for
very
each
much
other.
So,
and, but you know, it works, and it's kind of, it's rousing, and you can feel it when you watch it. And I think Scott plays a good villain. I think we may have said this before, but you know, I think Scott makes a better anti-hero or a villain than a clean-cut villain, and he'd probably admit this himself in terms of his past work. In this, I think he'd be a villain that I imagine the Chinese audience would love to hate and will be booing and
absolutely
be very satisfied to see him get
he's a proper pantomime boo hiss villain in this
and
one,
and you know, kind of taking notes a little bit from Full Metal Jacket,
absolutely, yes,
and obviously, you know, gave a great performance from a dramatic point of view, and you know, really really hammed it up in a good way, and it works in that universe, and the action was amazing, so these fight scenes were great, and Chris Collins, who you mentioned, was really good as well. So the hero's only as good as the villain in many cases.
Absolutely.
So in this, Ip Man has several great villains to go up against, and that really counts for a lot.
Totally agree. And I would add on that there are so many Ip Man films that have been made in the last 10 years. There's a slew of them, some better than others. Mm-hmm. But this did add something new to that whole Ip Man film universe, didn't it?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
For that alone, I think it's definitely worth checking out. A fitting conclusion, I would say, to the whole
definitely.
Ip Man saga. Okay. Let's reveal what we have chosen as our number two.
Number two.
My number two choice is Avengement.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I should say first, full disclosure, I had a little bit of involvement in this. Just in terms of, I was lucky enough to be a bit part stunt performer.
You got a tray to the face, didn't you?
I got a tray to the face. I got my head hit against the wall. Any of the happy accidents that happen when you come up against Scott Adkins in a film,
absolutely,
you're going down.
It's just in full rage mode.
I'm a big Scott Adkins fan, obviously, as I'm sure you know, as you are as well, as we know you are, and many people listening will be. And it was just really nice to see him tackle a completely different type of role. And it's, you know, essentially more of a kind of a crime film, a gangster thriller, if you will, very character driven, playing this absolutely terrifying, you know, don't really know at first if he's an anti-hero, he's an absolute villain. But then as the story unfolds out of sequence, we learn how he came to this place and, you know, why he wants to exact revenge on these people who have done some wrong against him.
Yeah.
Scott gave a great performance, something he hasn't done before, with a bit of a physical transformation, scarring, and he had this, you know, his metal teeth from where he's had his teeth knocked out
in a brutal curb stomp style scene.
But he's got other good actors in there. You've got Craig Fairbrass, Nick Moran, Lewis Mandler.
Great.
And directed by Jesse Johnson.
Yep.
And co-written by Jesse Johnson and Stu Small, who's Scott's longtime friend
did
and collaborator.
Accident Man as well.
And this was, we should say, you know, something different, something fresh and inventive, but also absolutely delivered in spades on what Scott Adkins fans would want, which is brutal, bone-breaking fight scenes.
Absolutely.
Very, you know, very impressive choreography from Dan Stiles and his guys.
I love that Scott is taking on these more challenging roles. It would definitely be in my honourable mentions for 2019.
That finale will be ranked as one of the best fights of the last decade.
I totally agree. It's one of the best barroom brawls I think you're going to find, isn't it? And a lot of people online have agreed. Okay. They've put Avengement as their best film of 2019. Fat Dragon 2007 on Instagram said Avengement, Scott Adkins at his most insane. Ross Boyask on Facebook wrote, I'd probably say Avengement tops the list, even though it's not a typical martial arts film. It's not, but it's certainly a fight-centric film, you would say. On Twitter, at Carlo Goes Boom, wrote, maybe not the most textbook martial arts movie, but I gotta go for Jesse V. Johnson's Avengement because it has both Johnson living up to his potential and Scott Adkins, who is already an incredible physical performer, doing some A-plus acting. It's quite an intense performance from Scott Adkins. We've not seen him turn in an acting performance like that, really. My number two is Shadow.
Okay.
Obviously, when you're looking at a list like this, it's very hard to compare a film like Shadow with, say, Hobbs and Shaw. Mm-hmm. But I very much enjoyed Shadow. Obviously, Shadow did do a full festival circuit back in 2018. But Shadow was released on DVD and Blu-ray in North America in August of this year, and it came to the UK in September. So I found Shadow to be completely compelling. I thought it was a return to form for Chang Yimou. Famously, he made Hero, House of Flying Daggers. He did the Beijing Olympics, the opening ceremony. And his last film was a bit of a dud. It was that strange Chinese-American creature feature, The Great Wall. It had Andy Lau and Matt Damon in it. I would say this is much more of a return to form. It's a wuxia film, and it's much more in keeping with the more romantic storytelling of his earlier work. And it's got a really clever through line, which, as the title suggests, it's all about duality. So it's about balance, it's about light and shade. And that is mirrored, I think, in a stunning way by the way the film is shot or the way it's treated in post. I'm not fully sure how they've managed to make this film look the way it does. It's not a black and white film, but it's not a fully colour film either, so I don't know whether they've dressed the sets to encompass a lot of these monochrome palettes, but then when colour does appear, it really punctuates through the scene. So I don't quite know how they've done that, but I would say it looks absolutely stunning. Also, this idea of balance is echoed in the fight scenes, which emphasise the hard and soft styles of Tai Chi. The story is both a large-scale warring states big battle war movie, but it's also a look behind the scenes at a kingdom in chaos and this love triangle at the heart of it. I thought it was absolutely wonderful, and there's a symmetry to the film as well, which is really compelling. I mean, it's one of those rare occasions, and I did this when I saw Hero for the first time. Mm-hmm. I watched it, and then I just watched it all again immediately afterwards.
So you got to the end credits, and
I thought, I'm going to go back and watch that.
Really?
Mike, I know that you maybe had other opinions about this
film.
Yeah,
look, no, I it's interesting, because, you know, I like Zhang Yimou, and I've liked all those previous films that you mentioned. It just didn't really resonate with me too much. I found it to be pretty pretentious and boring.
And say what you really think.
No, but, you know, it's just like, look, and obviously it was beautifully shot, looked amazing, and there were some great sequences and great scenes. The spinning, the metallic umbrellas.
What about that? Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, they're great. It's not, you know, did you enjoy that? No, I did. There were
that
loads
was great
of good
fun.
Scenes
yeah.
and sequences, and that looks really beautiful. Even some of the fight scenes in the rain and the kind of the foot movements and the arcs of motion. You know, it's really, really well shot and looks great. From my point of view, it's very artsy, obviously. But it's to a kind. It kind of lost me in places, and I'm not. You know, I don't claim to be. Like, I'm not an artsy viewer, and I'm not an anti-artsy type of person. You know, I like. I mean, there's lots of films that I like that people would probably think are quite pretentious choices, and I also have, you know, a kind of lowbrow taste in some regards. Yeah. But, you know, I like. You know, I don't know. It just wasn't. It's funny. All the things you said, like, it was very compelling. It was not compelling to me, and it didn't resonate with me personally. Which is interesting. I don't know why. You know why? Maybe certain things have to catch you in a certain mood or a certain mindset. Did you see it in the cinema?
I didn't see it in the cinema. I wish I'd seen it when it was doing the festival circuit. Yeah. See it on the big screen. And it is strange that a film like Shadow just lands on these streaming services without without much fanfare. I mean, let's not forget, Hero was presented by Quentin Tarantino when it first came out. It was given a huge national cinematic release, but Shadow just seemed to fall by the wayside and just sort of slipped in with a lot of other things. I think that wasn't fair. I think it is a much better film than that would suggest.
Yeah, and look, you know, obviously, once again, not to say that what I'm saying is fact. It's like, you know, it just, something doesn't resonate with me. It's, you know, it's going to resonate with somebody else.
Obviously, it's not for everyone, but Shadow is my number two. Let's reveal our number one choice for our favourite martial arts film of 2019.
Number one!
Yay.
I really went for it on that one. Number one. I think we've got the same film again, but I'll let you reveal your number one. No, I can't see your list there.
So my number one is going to be John Wick Chapter 3.
Unbelievable, yes. Is that your choice? Yes, it is my choice, yes.
Well, very good. Well, I think, was it 2 years ago we both chose
Chapter 2? We did.
So I guess as John Wick fans, clearly John Wick fans, maybe that's an inevitable conclusion.
Yeah,
but look,
it's the right one.
Yeah, I think it's the right one. I mean, if you're a John Wick fan, you know, this was obviously it's a brilliant film. A great third chapter, which absolutely raises the stakes again, which is, I think, what the whole franchise does. Yeah. I love this universe. So the way they've created this kind of graphic novel style universe with all its subsects and characters, developing that further, taking it even further, broadening the scope of the characters and the world, but the action, introducing, you know, some of the dog foo, as I'm referring to it, the horses,
and horse foo, why not?
The bikes,
that was great.
So there's so many. I think when you think about something like that and just kind of stand back and think about all the memorable sequences, all the memorable characters, and just moments throughout, you know, it's not just a key scene that's a takeout. There's so many great moments. Halle Berry's whole sequence, which surprisingly isn't, it wasn't actually a large part of the film, actually. She's only in a fairly small segment.
That's right.
When you understand the amount of time and effort that went into creating those fights and how much Halle Berry trained for her scenes, it's even more admirable and, you know, amazing. But then just watching it as a purely entertaining spectacle, it stands on its own two feet as
absolutely
well.
Absolutely agree. I think this may be the best one out of all three of them, Mike. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I still think the first one...
Yes. It is great.
It's smaller and it's more kind of refined and honed in and simple. Yeah. But I just like the simplicity of it.
I think what I really enjoyed about John Wick 3 was probably the inclusion or bringing back Jonathan Eusebio and John Valera to do the fight scenes. It's a more fight-centric film, I would say, than certainly Chapter 2. Mm-hmm. Particularly enjoyed the inclusion of Yayan and Csep from the Raid films, obviously, and Mark Dacascos.
Yeah.
I mean, any film that brings Mark Dacascos back into mainstream action and has him as the lead bad guy, and he's involved in a martial arts fight scene with Keanu Reeves, I mean, I am sold on that.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think, again, that comes from the 8711 guys obviously being huge, not just huge fans of these films, but having a lineage back to these genre, you know, even B-movies of the 90s. Yeah. And obviously in the first film, having Daniel Bernhardt in there, who had, you know, obviously works a lot with 8711 already, but these guys, you know, these guys are true martial arts film fans.
You guys absolutely love John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. Just some of the messages online. Lord Lucy Fugus, I hope I've said that right, said John Wick 3, breathtaking violence / fights, amazing art direction, and a magnificent consolidation of the John Wick persona, especially in the closing scene at the end. Yeah, that's all in capitals with an exclamation mark. Tristan Glover on Instagram said, it has been a fantastic year, and I'd love to give it to a Jesse V. Johnson film, but I gotta give it to big Hollywood. John Wick 3 is the only action movie that I gave 5 stars to this year. Tai Singh again, the man used a horse as a weapon, and any film that brings back Mark Dacascos into the mainstream deserves all the plaudits. Totally agree with you on that, Tai. Ilias T on Twitter said, John Wick 3, why? The knife scene, Halle Berry, the showdown with Yayan and Csep, and Mark Dacascos. We didn't mention the knife scene. What an incredible knife scene that is, with Tiger Chen, and hands down one of the best knife fights I think I've seen.
Lobbing knives at each
just
other.
and it
pretty
was
desperate and relentless. Yeah. It doesn't feel, what's nice with some of this action, it doesn't feel so clean cut. It's kind of messy and scrappy, like, you know, two people or a group on a group trying to kind of frantically see who kills each everyone first.
Yeah, there is a real sort of gritty scrappiness to it as well, which I really enjoyed. And our friend Sean Malloy, who runs the podcast I Must Break This Podcast, the Dolph Lundgren podcast. Sean wrote the best cast, certainly goes to Triple Threat, so enjoy Triple Threats. But the best martial arts movie, without a doubt, goes to John Wick 3. This movie was made for fans of the genre, by fans of the genre, with amazing nods to martial arts flicks of the 70s and 80s. John Wick 3 is an amazing love letter to the genre that made it while still serving as a fantastic pulp story. Can't wait for the next film and to see which kung fu legends show up. That's very true. John Wick 4. I mean, they're really going to have to go some to top the level of action and the quality of John Wick Chapter 3. Do you think, Mike?
But I think taking the universe further, expanding it, I can imagine that to be to be the case. And you probably thought after John Wick Chapter 2, what are they going to do next? And they did something new.
Yeah.
So they'll have ideas like this, I'm sure.
I think Chad Stahelski went on record to say that he could quite happily make John Wick films now for the rest of his career. So there we go. If he can maintain the quality of John Wick Chapter 3, then that would be very much welcome.
Yeah.
So there we go. We've agreed again on another year. Could you believe it? Let's raise a toast then to John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum, our favourite martial arts film of 2019.
And so it begins.
Our service is still off limits to me.
What do you need?
Guns. Lots of guns.
We should just say a few honourable mentions from the year as well. I really liked Iron Fists and Kung Fu Kicks, the documentary. Master Z, Ant-Man Legacy, I had a lot of fun watching that. Hobbs and Shaw, I thought, was really good fun as well. Alita Battle Angel. I mention Alita Battle Angel because a lot of people got in touch with me when I did a call out to say, name your favourite martial arts film of 2019. So many people on Twitter came back in support of Alita Battle Angel. This is a real hardcore Alita Battle Angel fans out there. Was there any films that were on the long list, Mike, that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, not to be too repetitious. You mentioned Iron Fist and Kung Fu Kicks, great documentary. Quite a quick, fast-paced, whistle-stop tour of the history of the martial arts genre and Golden Harvest and Shaw Brothers and so on, but I think very entertaining. And then similarly on that note, In Search of the Last Action Heroes. It is another really good documentary released this year, which, again, isn't purely martial arts focused, but touches on the martial arts genre, a lot of the canon films of the 80s, Chuck Norris and so on, and then takes us up to current day, speaking to people like Scott Adkins and Richard Norton and Cynthia Rothrock, as well as the more mainstream action and looking at the films of, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sly Stallone and so on. You mentioned Alita. I really enjoyed Alita, actually. Great character, and just looked amazing.
Yeah.
I think visually quite a stunning film.
Mike, this has been an absolute pleasure, as always. Before we sign off, let's have a quick rundown of some of the movies we are really looking forward to in 2020 in the feature that we like to call Films to Look Forward To in 2020.
Films to Look Forward To in 2020.
A lot of films coming out in 2020. Mulan's coming out next year. We've got Mortal Kombat. That's actually coming out the following year. Mm-hmm. So that's in 2021. Jiu-Jitsu. That's the new movie that features Nicolas Cage alongside Juju Chan, Frank Grillo, Tony Jaa, and Alan Musi. Vanguard is the new Jackie Chan film. That's a Chinese New Year release. That's coming out in January. Enter the Fat Dragon. We might finally get to see Enter the Fat Dragon. That's Donnie Yen's kung fu comedy. The Kingsman is a prequel. That's obviously in the Kingsman world, the Kingsman franchise. Black Widow, of course. We've got Kung Fury 2. Snake Eyes is the G.I. Joe spin-off movie. Vengeance 2. There's so many movies coming out next year. Any of those take your fancy at all, Mike?
Yeah, you mentioned Mortal Kombat. I'm a big Mortal Kombat fan of the game. You mentioned Donnie Yen, Enter the Fat Dragon. I'm not sure what to make of that yet, but I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of the original Enter the Fat Dragon. I don't believe it's too connected to that, to the Sammo Hung version.
No, I don't think so.
So, but it'll be funny to see Donnie doing his comedy. Probably more on the Donnie Yen side of things, though. I'd be more looking forward to something like Raging Fire.
Yes, absolutely.
And The Outlaw Johnny Black from Michael Jai White.
The Outlaw Johnny Black looks really good. That's a crowdsourced movie as well. Yeah, so, very much looking forward to
that. But look, obviously, Michael Jai White's great. He's a great actor, but he's a great filmmaker and writer. He's trying new things, but he's taking it into new territory. So I really admire and respect that.
Mike, What are your plans for 2020? I know you've got Life of Action Volume 2 is coming out in February.
It's coming out February, and I look forward to people being able to read that and hopefully enjoying it, you know, moving on to other things. But yeah, hopefully I'll have more to say about that.
Sure.
A little bit down the road.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about that, Mike, in the new year.
Yeah, thank you.
All it remains for me to say is that it's been an absolute pleasure to spend time with you again, Mike, in your lovely home here to record this end of year
special. Thanks for coming, Ben. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. All it remains for me to say is Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays, of course, to all the Foo followers out there listening to this, wherever you are in the world. To play us out, here is a small collection of outtakes from Season 4. For anyone who thinks that this is quite a slick and professional operation, I can very much assure you that it's very much not that. So until we meet again sometime in 2020, remember to keep it locked to all the usual KFMG pod channels for all the latest martial arts movie news, reviews and podcasts. We will be back at some point in the future, but in the meantime, do take care. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, have a lovely, relaxing break, and bye for now.
Raise a glass to the Foo followers.
There we go. Thank you very much, Mike.
Cheers.
Cheers. Hello, 1, 2. Fans of Hong Kong action cinema should certainly enjoy... Here we go. Here is my conversation with one of the stars of the Ip Cum... Remember, you can keep up to date with all the latest martial arts movie news, reviews, and podcasts by visiting our Jude's Company. A huge thank you to... But we also have the UK filmmaker, actor, fight choreographer, blah, 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 blah. Clean up in aisle 5, please. Here we go. This is me talking to... the producer, founder of Iron Dragon TV, and all-round martial arts master. We also have a monthly newsletter. We also have a monthly newsletter. 1, 2, 1, 2. There you go, our end of year show there, wrapping up all of the martial arts movie activity for 2019. I do hope that you enjoyed listening to that. I just quickly wanted to say a few thank yous before I sign off for the year. Of course, a huge thank you to Mike Fury for taking the time to take part in this episode. Thank you very much, Mike. A very special thank you to the always wonderful George Dennis, who lent his technical skills to this episode, for which I am very grateful. Thank you so much, George. A huge heartfelt dedication goes out to my girlfriend, who has been incredibly supportive throughout the years. There's been a lot of stuff going on around us, and she has been incredibly cool and supportive throughout it all. So thank you so much. A big thank you to anyone who has ever sent us a message, emailed the show, written a review, left a star rating, sent us a tweet or liked a photo on Instagram, whatever it is because of you, the loyal Foo followers, that we continue to produce this show and help in our own small way towards promoting and celebrating this wonderful genre of film. So I will now be taking a short break, not entirely sure for how long, but I will be back at some point in 2020. If you do want to get in touch, the door is always open. You can send me an email at hello@kungfumovieguide.com. You can check us out on all of the usual social media channels. Until next time, Foo followers, have a wonderful holiday. Do take care, and I will speak to you all again at some point in the future on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, bye for now.
Even even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.